Yeah. Let me tell you, I have cucumbers, tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, cauliflower, broccoli, peas, pole beans, jalapenos, three different types of lettuce, and like five different types of tomatoes.
Wow. Did you say onions?
No, I'm not a big fan of onions. Oh. Have you ever grown onions?
We grow the scallions, the green onions, which I'm a little confused on it. We should have Kevin on here because I think, see, my wife tells me that green onions are just regular onions that you just don't let them grow as big to where they get the big bulb. But I always thought they were like a separate type of plant. So I'm a little unclear on that.
Like, because a chive is an onion too, right?
I think so. It's probably part of that same family, you know. But one thing we've discovered is that, and I would like to grow herbs, and we've tried, but the problem is, like cilantro. I use a lot of cilantro because I like to make salsa. I like a lot of Mexican, Thai food, Indian food. It all uses cilantro. But to use cilantro, you basically have to use like a huge handful each time. And so you have to plant a lot, because if you just plant one or two plants, that's like one or two meals basically, and then the plant is gone. And like basil, you know, I don't use a whole lot of basil, but when you do, you need more than just a couple of leaves. You need a bunch, and then I end up just stripping the entire plant of all of its leaves.
Two little small green nubs poking out of the ground where your basil plant used to be. So I went heavy herbs this year because I learned how to, especially with basil, actually, how to like cut it. You don't cut all the way off and you don't just pull the leaves.
Oh, really?
There you go. No problem. And you go down to find like the bottom four leaves or something like that. And then just above those, and that promotes new growth. And that's how you get like those basil bushes or something like that. I'm doing some like little containers on the patio, which have like chives and sage and whatnot. They look nice. They smell nice. And every so often you get to put some basil in your whatever you would put basil in.
We have four tomato plants this year. That's like my only plant that I really care about every year, because I just don't think you can buy a good tomato. So I've kind of come down to really what we do is we'll plant three cherry tomato plants and then one of the larger ones. But I used to experiment a lot more with tomatoes, and I've discovered that those heirloom tomatoes are just ridiculously hard to grow correctly and to get. And some of them really don't taste that much better. They might be, ooh, they're a black tomato or something, you know, but it doesn't have that much flavor. We tried all these different crazy varieties. You know, there's just hundreds of different ones, but we just keep coming back to like the sweet 100 cherry tomatoes, and they're so good. All I did this year is I did three of those, and then I did one of the kind of slicing tomatoes.
And each of the plants grows like a million of those little small tomatoes.
And I just love them. I just love them.
You pop them right in the garden. Like you just, like, they barely make it back to the house.
I know, they're all warm and hot in there.
Yes. So I did five different types because I wanted to like, I wanted to try some of the different more. Like, so there's a yellow one. There's like 500 different types of tomatoes.
Oh, it's crazy. Well, you have to report back. Tell me which ones turned out good and which one, because I always go in eager with a new type of tomato. And it's also interesting how some tomato plants just want to grow crazy on their own, and others are so fussy and they're like, oh, please grow.
Overall though, tomatoes, at least here where we are, super easy to grow. It's like one of the most set it and forget it thing outside of like cucumbers or like some of the other.
Yeah. As long as you get a lot of sunlight, I think you're good to go on tomatoes.
That's it. And then I'm doing an experiment on sunflowers.
Oh.
I'm actually just about to release an Instagram video about it. I made a sunflower, you know, Kevin's birdie beds. Yeah. So I dedicated one whole bed to be a sunflower.
Oh, nice.
At the base of the yard. And I was like, this is going to be great because it's raised. So therefore it'll be, less desirable for animals to kind of get in and all of the rest and whatever. However, I think I've overplanted because I just went and I bought about 20 packs of seeds
Just scattered
of
them.
All different types. Yeah. And that was kind of the thought. The thought was, what would happen if I literally just, because I was at the store and I'm like, sunflower seeds, these are the giant, these are the northern lights, these are the lemongrass. I'm like, what are all the differences and which ones are easy? So instead of figuring it all out, I took all of the packages, ripped them all open, poured all of the seeds evenly into this birdie's bed, filled it with soil, and now it's starting to grow, but they're very, very close together. So I don't know if I messed things up or if I should. So I'm going to put a video out, and I'm going to actually appeal to Kevin, and hopefully he will let me know what to do with my sunflowers.
He'll probably say, "Were you crazy?"
As many sunflowers as possible.
He'll probably say, "No, you're killing them." I don't know.
It's horrible. There, I think they all underperform because there's too many. But I want to see if, like, I don't know. Maybe
it'd be nice if you could get sunflower seeds to eat from those. I don't know how to do that. I guess from that main part of it, that big round.
It's from the big middle part, isn't it?
I think so. We had some, went to some friend's house years ago, and they had, like, it must have been like this perennial sunflower tree. I've never seen anything like it. The thing must have been 20 feet tall. It was huge. I've never seen anything like that.
I had three sunflowers last year, and they were about 6 feet tall. Wow. Actually, one was slightly taller than me. They're enormous. And we went to a farm, and they had a proper sunflower field. That's actually what inspired the whole thing, was walking through a sunflower field. And it was awesome. And I saw all the sunflowers that they planted so close together. And I'm like, well, if they can do it, I can just go to the store and grab a bunch of packs, and it's going to work out the exact same way, right?
Sure. Why not? Just throw a bunch of seeds in the ground. That'll work. It should.
Are you ready for VidCon?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to just kind of, I'm approaching it from the attitude of, I'm not going there to learn a single thing. And if I do, that's great. But I'm not going there with the attitude of, like, this is going to be a learning experience and I've got to hit. I'm going there with the attitude of, I just want to meet people.
Is that so? When you tell people, it's like, "Hey, I'm going to VidCon in a couple of weeks," and they're like, "Oh yeah, what are you going to do there?" What do you say?
I'm going to just meet up with some friends. That's an expensive way to meet some friends.
You could have just invited them over.
No, but I will go to the panels and stuff that are interesting and sit in on them. It could be enjoyable to do that.
Well, you spent all that money on that fancy
that same one, right? The industrial, strength ticket. It's on the top floor, away from the riffraff.
Yeah, well, to keep away from all the riff. Are you a good packer?
No, I'm horrible.
Really?
I overpack. I overpack.
So, okay. So you're going for four nights?
Five, I think. I forget what it is.
Four or five nights. Yeah. So how are you going to pack?
So
to go,
it's horrible. I always overpack because I never know. Well, maybe I should wear some sort of nice clothes. I might go out at night. I better bring a swimsuit. I might go swimming, even though I probably won't. I always think I will, but I don't. And then I'll just have to have. Well, if I get a shirt dirty, and I don't know what I'm going to be feeling. If I should, I don't know. So I take too much stuff. I'll take like three pairs of shoes. It's ridiculous. I really pack ridiculously. I need to get that under control. How about you?
I don't know what to. I'm always faced with the: do I check in a bag or do I try to get everything?
Oh, no, I always check it. I don't want to haul that thing around. Yeah.
Well, during COVID, when the airports were dealing with lots of staff shortages and whatnot, it was problematic, especially here in Toronto. They were having a particular problem with our airport here about people losing their luggage.
Oh, no.
We literally knew three different people who had took flights over the course of a couple of weeks, and they all lost luggage. Luggage sent to Cleveland, luggage sent to Pittsburgh but
well, if you're a good packer, I'm sure you can get everything on a carry-on, right, for 4 or 5 days.
Well, especially if we're going to a warm place, which we are. So it's probably just, you need a couple of like staple shorts and then some shirts and undies, socks, and the rest. My thing always is should I bring my laptop just in case I need to do some emergency work?
Me too.
Right?
And I'll take it on the plane. I always think I'm going to bring my laptop on the plane and I can get some work done. And I never do.
Yeah, you all plug it
in. I end up listening to like downloaded Spotify stuff and
or watch a movie on a tiny screen.
But for me, this is like a 1-hour flight from, I'm going out of Oakland to to Orange County. So it's a shoot, super short little shuttle flight. It barely gets up in the air and then it's already down. And it's so dumb because they always do the, like, we're going to do the drink service. And so anyway, it's like, you know, 15 minutes into the flight before they can start the drink service. And then they finally get your orders, get you your drink. And as soon as they're, as soon as they get it to you, then they're like, okay, now we're going to pick it all up.
Come clean it up.
I'm like, I can really go an hour without having a drink or peanuts. I'm fine.
And what is it with the peanuts? Why flying and is it because it makes your jaw make a crunching
it's
sound
something
and that'll
to
pop
do?
Your ears?
I don't know. I don't eat them. I won't take the junk. Well, then some of these flights, they give you just all sorts of weird
salty snacks.
Food. And I don't want that. So
yeah. Air Canada does pretzels. You get a little bag of pretzels. It's like, well, I don't want pretzels.
Yeah. I take my water bottle with me, fill it up in the airport, and then I'm good to go.
That's it. Yes, because you can't possibly bring that over. You can't bring your water bottle through security.
Well, you have to dump it out. And so
because they think it's
vodka.
And
it's weird depending on which airport you're at. Some of them have like these really fancy little dumping stations now where you can dump the liquids right there at the TSA. And other ones are like, nah, we don't have anything. There's a trash can there. And so everybody just dumps their water into this trash can.
When's the last time you were on a plane?
It's been a while. It's probably last June. It may have been June when I went to Colorado to take care of my stepmom.
That's right. Are you a good good flyer? Do you like flying?
No, I hate it. I don't. Really? I don't mind the flying itself. I just don't like the whole business. It's just it's more frustrating and more of a hassle than anything. I just want to get to the place I'm going. So I don't. You know, I usually don't like freak out about flying. I don't have problems with the security checks or anything. I think that most of those are kind of overblown. People all freaked out about those, and I can get through those usually pretty quickly. And I think if you approach an airport with a good attitude, you're just going to be patient. You're going to be friendly to these people who are the security people, because I know when that first started, everybody was all pissed off and they're, oh, he touched me and all something. Just, you know, it's like, just do it. Everybody's having to do it. Quit being a bitch and just go through the line and be friendly to the people. If you're nice to these people, talk to the people, ask them, hey, how's your day and everything. You'd be surprised that they are actually real people.
I know, or like joke around with them or something like
just
that.
Just don't joke about like, yeah, I got a gun in my pack.
Yeah. Nothing funny about that. Is it that people have forgotten how to stand in line? Because I've realized that as well. Like I was at a Starbucks picking up a drink for Melissa. And because I don't go to Starbucks very often, I don't know all of the tricks of the trade. And I stupidly walked and stood in a line for three people and then made an order. And while I was there, these people coming in and picking up their mobile orders and like just skirting the line and just shooting the thing, da, 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 da. We really have gotten to the place where like people can't be like, okay, it'll be a 15-minute trip to do. Or when I go to the airport, it'll take, you know, it's going to take 2 hours before, but by the time I get to the airport, by the time I'm on the plane, it's going to be 2 hours. And I think to your point, if you were just to go and be like, it's going to be 2 hours, you would stop like checking your watch or like seeing all the lines and being like, oh, that line's going to take 45 minutes. Well, yes, it probably is. And if you actually just prepared yourself for that, it probably would have been a lot easier.
Yeah. I think that the only thing about the lines is that's a variable that you can't predict on how long those lines are going to be. And that's kind of probably what frustrates people the most, because I'm a real planner. I can plan. Okay. I know how long it's going to take me to get someplace. I know how long it'll take me to walk from the concourse to the gate and all this stuff. And I could plan all that out, but that's the one variable you can't count on is how long is that line going to be. And so, you know, I just try to play it by ear. When I can, I try to fly out of Oakland instead of San Francisco, because it's a much easier airport to get in and out of. And usually the lines are, I don't think I've ever waited longer than like 15, 20 minutes in the line there.
You're always going to have that person in the line that's like shaking their head and trying to start a conversation about how everything's understaffed these days, or companies don't care about, look at all the people in the law. So I was flying out literally just a few weeks ago. I was flying out and I was in, it was, so now when you go to the airport, at least in Toronto, there's the Air Canada, you used to go up to the like thing and stand in a big line, and there'd be three people there, and they would do all the thing. Now they have all the little kiosks. So most people just go to the kiosks, and then you drop the thing off. And some people go to, like, oh, I still like talking to a person. Yeah. So that those are the, and allow me to restate that, they are people who are, let me go talk to a person. So there's 150 of these kiosks, which are specifically designed to make this an express trip for you, for all those people who don't want to stand in line to speak to a person. This guy, that was his voice too. This guy. So I had to go to this line because I had golf clubs with me. So I had to check an oversized bag. So I wouldn't have been able to use these things anyways. So I went to stand in the line, and this gentleman stood behind me with his wife. And then after that, there was like three other people that came up behind him for various reasons. So now there's a lineup of six people, grand total of six people in this line. And there's one person working the thing. So whatever, at an airport, that's probably going to take maybe, I don't know, 10 to 15 minutes to get through all, one person to get through all, whatever. And sure enough, he stands like a little teapot with his hands on his hips. You think they would hire some more people if the da-da-da. And I was biting my tongue till it was bleeding down my throat because this guy and his wife was just like, well, Herb. Let me tell you, it's just, I don't know. It's the, everything just went, no one wants to work. And it just turned into like, people don't want to work. Companies don't care about customer service because they had to stand in a line with six people in
right.
it. And it just, it drives home the point of like, we've completely forgotten that like before 2020, like remember going to like Disneyland and just being like, it's an hour before you get on this roller coaster.
But you know, I guess the last time I flew was just a few months ago. I forgot about, I went to Atlanta for that workbench con. Yeah. But people tend to turn into toddlers when they're in these. And it's almost embarrassing to watch them because there was the same thing. I was waiting in a line there, and this was at a line to get food. This was one of the, and Atlanta Airport is an absolute zoo. I mean, it's huge. It's the busiest airport in the U.S., Atlanta. And so they've got all these places you can buy food there. I mean, it's just like a, and it's all horrible. But the lines are really long. So you just know that, okay, lines are going to be long, whatever. So what else have I got to do? I'm just sitting around waiting for the plane to show up. But yeah, there was this couple in front of me, and okay, this is great for an audio podcast, but this is exactly what they were doing. They were going... And they were shifting from foot to foot, and then this audible sighing. I'm like, what are you, 4 years old? You can't just stand and you. I don't know what they want other people to do when they're in those situations. It reminds me of during all the mask mandates, and you would have this one person who would refuse. I'm not wearing a mask indoors, and I'm like, suck it up, you little bitch. I mean, you're acting like a toddler. The rest of us have to do this shit. What makes you so special that I don't have to do it? Get over yourself. You're acting like an idiot.
My rights and my freedoms. You know what? Those are the same people who, as soon as the airplane lands, and then it taxis, and then the little jetway connects, and the seatbelt sign goes off, they are the people who stand up 1.2 seconds later, and are just like, then standing with their
stuff.
They
just have to stand there, or do that weird curved standing because they can't get out completely into the aisle.
Every tall person, just sit your ass down.
Nobody, and you're not going to get ahead of that aisle in front of you. It just
goes in the way of the. Have you ever tried to just storm up from seat 25 and just like go out and get out just because you got up first? Doesn't work.
I don't understand how people don't understand kind of airplane and flying protocols and kind of the norms that have been established for the past 100 years on how we do these things. Just do it.
I like that Air Canada shout. Special shout out to Air Canada, and special shout out to the Air Canada representative who went on the mic at the boarding gate and told all of the people who had oversized bags that they were trying to get into carry-on that it was never going to work because it was a brand new plane. I'd never been on a plane like this before. It was a brand new plane, and I swear to you, the overhead compartments were two-thirds the size of what I remember like they are really cracking down on it. If it's going to be on here, it better be a purse, or because we started making all these luggages was, oh, it's carry-on size, but it has this side pocket and this attachment, these wheels. And to see, I don't know if you've seen in the airport, they have those little
testing
little things. And this person's trying to jam it.
It'll fit.
And I'm just, my smile could not be larger as they are calling these people out one by one and they're forcing them to air check their luggage and whatnot. Right. But yes, we, you know what? And further to your, something you said earlier, bring your swimsuit. I'm going to bring my swimsuit. Yeah, we'll go, we'll use the pool at the hotel.
Good. Well, everybody's learning how to make thumbnails.
It's true. Is it?
We can be at the pool.
Is there a pool at the hotel?
I'm sure there is. Southern California, every hotel has a pool.
That's right. And we ended up at the same hotel, right?
I think so.
We shouldn't tell because then people were going to go and
all of our
fanboys
will come out.
Fans. But we are expecting to see perhaps a familiar face to anybody who listens to this podcast. We know that there's maybe a couple people that might be going to video.
Yeah, and if we can do our, we can bring our recording stuff, we'll try to do a podcast.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
So there you go. That's something I have to pack.
Either we're going to have to do it like up there on that third level. You've seen the people where they're sitting there doing their podcasts or shows and during the thing. We could do that. Or we'd have to sit into a room somewhere.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Do we really want to be one of those people doing their podcast in the podcast
area? Yeah, let's do it. Because you get like a little coffee table there and then you can people walk by, hey, would you like to be on our podcast? And they'll be, who the fuck are you? I'm like, we're Chad and Steve.
Chad and Steve, like, no.
Oh, man. So I've been having some fun with some anti-clickbait this past week.
Oh, that's right. How has anti-clickbait been going?
Damn, I swear, this I may be setting a trend here. I made that deck to cover up a patio, and I just thought, you know what, I'm going to try something. I'm just going to title it just because I was thinking of all these... Oh, all these different types. What's the hook? What's the thing that's going to pull people in? You know, I almost died making this deck or, you know. So I just said, I'm just going to describe exactly what it is. This is a floating deck sitting on uneven concrete. I mean, that's a problem and I solved it. And here's the thing, but it's it. And then I was going through the thumbnails. I've gone through all the parts of the video thinking, where's the dramatic moment? Where can I put the part where I'm doing something that creates a sense of wonder and intrigue? And then I thought, I'm going to go old school and I'm just going to post a picture of the completed project, which always was kind of death because people would see it and they'd be like, oh, I don't need to watch the video. I was the same way. And here it is. That thing soared up to my number one spot for a time. It's come back down to number two now. But the weird thing is that when I released the video, it was at number eight. And then I thought, well, maybe that's just because of the title and thumbnail. Maybe I got to do the thing, but I'm just going to stick to it. And that lasted for almost 8 hours. And then it started to take off. So it was the subscribers that first, you know, when it's first released that aren't really watching the video because that was why it was number eight. And then after they released it or started recommending it, it says it gets getting a lot of views from sources outside of YouTube, external sources. So I don't know if that means search or what. I can't imagine that much volume from people searching for how to make this specific type of deck. But anyways, I was kind of pleasantly surprised with it. So I'm going to kind of lean into that. Just I'm going to go old school, post the name of the project and the picture of the project and see what happens.
Sources outside of YouTube could very well be what we had discussed previously on this podcast,
Google,
which is the news feed from Pixel. And now, isn't it interesting to think that you're not titling necessarily something for a YouTube video search audience? Now, this would be something that's popping up in someone's phone. So like the whole compulsion to click would be different. So as much as you're saying the finished project looks like that used to be death because, quote unquote, that was the YouTube audience. Now it's like it's a completely different
you're
reaching completely different people, which is really interesting. And I'm also wondering if it's because when I look at that thumbnail, I wonder how you cut the boards to do the rock bit.
Could be. Yeah.
That was my initial thing.
I did do a little bit of like, clickbait on the thumbnail. I put like no anchors needed. That was kind of the gimmick. That was kind of the gimmick I thought was of the all along was going to be the gimmick of the video, is that you can make this deck without having to anchor it to the ground, which is a typical way of doing a deck. So I just left that little bit in there, but I don't know if that really adds too much to it.
I like how you didn't even like capitalize anything else. You just capitalized building. You didn't even put a period.
No. I just like this slacker approach to see what happens. Oh, it seemed to be working, you know.
And it's done better than your 15 things over 15 years video. So, I mean, obviously
that video was garbage. That's like number 8 right now, or 9. I can't remember which. Yeah.
But not garbage video.
No, I mean you know what? I should have put that on my second channel. It didn't really belong on this channel. I think that was a problem. I might have actually gotten more views. I probably would have had more interest in it on the other channel.
So why don't you take it down and put it on your second channel to see what happens? Have you ever thought about doing that?
No, never thought.
Isn't
about
it crazy?
Yeah.
It's such a crazy thought, right?
It probably is.
Because I remember after 2 or 3 years, I had released the Honeydew List video and da-da-da-da, and it just came at a time that we were just not getting any traction on any of our videos. Like, whatever. It was a weird algorithm moment for us, at least. And the video has like 15,000 views or something like that. It's like, wow, that's very strange. And I really have just wondered, should I just take that video down, delete it? I would have to delete it completely and then re-upload it, title it something different or like whatever, to change the title again and just relaunch it and see if it goes out and like if anybody actually were to notice something.
That's
like
interesting.
That.
Yeah. I don't know. That'd be a curious test.
We're doing the same thing as far as long form content is concerned, and we're having the exact same types of results, especially recently. We did a video all about soap scum, and normally a 90-minute video about soap scum would not whatever, but I think it's because right now there's a discrepancy in the amount of content that is available for things like that, because probably right now it's very easy to have all of this kind of clickbaity content. So like, kudos, Steve, doubling down on like long form projects.
Well, I actually made a short story on Instagram about that and talking about this just real briefly. But I feel like anymore, when I see the clickbait thumbnails and clickbait titles, it's like just, I really have this sense of repulsion. I'm like, ugh, God. And I just don't want to watch them anymore, especially from woodworkers, because it all seems like they're trying to copy Mr. Beast, which is a whole different demographic. And it's like, it just kind of makes me look at them and go, wow, you're just like so needy.
Just like so thirsty.
Yeah. really are. I don't know.
I mean, and we have talked this about this before, like aspirational projects or projects that you just enjoy kind of like watching being done for the satisfaction aspect of it. We deal with the same thing in the cleaning space. There's hundreds of channels where you can just watch people cleaning, but it still kind of remains like there's real channels which are like, hey, here's a video about soap scum. Here's a video about how to take some wood pallets and turn it into a simple project. There's a newfound value in that.
You know what I'm thinking about doing? I think I will do, actually. I've been looking into it, is setting up a Shopify page for, I think I'm going to start selling woodworking plans, some. But I'd like your opinion on this and your advice, because it's kind of been my long running bit on the channel, is that I have free woodworking plans. And people always like that. They appreciate that. But it's also at the point where now I'm thinking the video itself isn't, I mean, the deck video, for instance, not that I would have plans for that because that's such a specialized thing. But that video, the project costs like $1,700 worth of materials to build that with the redwood and everything. And I'm not sure if I'm going to make that back on YouTube alone, just from the YouTube AdSense, because of the way those numbers have just dropped so much. And I like to think that I talk to other people and they all kind of say the same thing, but I kind of wonder if it's also just me or my channel or whatever, that's just not paying as much. And so I'm kind of thinking, I want to start. I went through my plans, and I have like over 100 woodworking plans. And some of them, I think the more recent ones I'm doing, I'm trying to do something different. I'm adding some commentary in the plans themselves and kind of making them fun. And it's a whole different approach to how to look at a woodworking building plan. But I'm kind of thinking, well, what if I offered some of those for sale, especially some of the better ones, but still had all the other ones on there. Here's the free ones. Here's some premium ones. I could bundle some of them into certain categories, but then there's a couple of questions I would have for you is, what do I do about the ones that are already for 15 years worth of free plans? To suddenly make those say $5 or something. I mean, I could kind of see moving forward, even though I'm still going to get some blowback, I'm sure, for offering, but I'm not talking about a lot of money, but I think there's something to kind of offset. And then the other thought I had is it could be, at least on some of the older plans, it would be free or pay what you want.
So that was probably going to be my first suggestion, is I just love the, hey, I'll keep them free, but here's the support system that I use to keep them free.
Mm-hmm.
Like that just optically has such a great, the other aspect is, hey, I appreciate that they're free. I don't want to make a whole bunch of money off of them. So they are all just 99 cents. It's like whatever. Or if you get 10 or more, it's whatever. And then you just have a pricing structure. So therefore it's like, you're now charging, but at least you're not going from $0 to $5 or $0 to $10 on some of these. Or keep 80% of them, which are free, and the ones that kind of do well and like generate that interest, and then keep a few of them or build out some new ones, which are the meatier ones that you can charge $5 to $10 for.
Yeah.
Use the free ones to continually get people to be interested. If you want to download them, sign up with your email address, and then you can add them to a drip to sell them. Yeah. Maybe the more premium ones. My biggest suggestion would be to take all of your PDFs and make one woodworking from your mortals
bundle.
Mega bundle. Yeah. 190, whatever that ends up being, that would be probably a really good offering for you, because I'm sure a lot of the core fan base would be like, yeah, I'll just do the one thing, you know, like pay and just get everything.
That's a good idea. Because
they would also maybe see that as a way of supporting. It's
right.
Like, hey, you know, I'm still keeping the majority of them free. I'm moving some of them over to the pay model because, you know, whatever. However, if you're interested in, you know, getting everything, here's a, you know, whatever, $49 gets you the whole kit and caboodle. We realized that after, like, we had 3 or 4 ebooks, and they were doing quite well. And then we had some smaller items, which were just like checklists and whatnot, and they did okay. And then we just took one and we just bundled them. So here's 5 together, and, you know, they're digital products. So it's so easy to like discount and not really kind of feel the impact of it. And I think we have our mega bundle now. It's like $20, and it's like 70% off what you would pay if you bought them all individually. And people love that because it's just one, they get it. It's a reasonable price for the most part. Like, they've decided to make that transaction so they can go through and download 7 at 99 cents or $1.49 or whatever, or just go and be like, here's how much I'm probably willing to, like, you know, give for this. And then
I think it's going to have to be like new plans moving forward, because like, I'm building an Adirondack chair right now, or I haven't started it yet, but I've finished the design. I'm like, man, this is a really good design and I really like these plans, but there's no way I'm going to have that infrastructure in place to start charging for that, for this project. And then if I do afterwards, it just doesn't feel right. So I don't know exactly. And the more I think about this, and I was looking into Shopify, and then I looked at like my website and figured, what do I need to do here? Because my website just is languishing there. It's just been, I haven't touched it. I haven't added anything to it in like 4 or 5 years. I mean, just nothing. So it's dead. It's a dead website basically. But all of the links on my YouTube videos for the plans link to pages on that site. You know, some going back 15 years. So I think what I'd like to do is just make a, see, I always start out with one idea, but it expands into, this is a much bigger thing I've got to deal with now. It's like, okay, let's just revamp the entire website, have it just basically the woodworking for mere mortals store. And that's all it is. It's just stuff.
That's all it is.
These are all the plans. You'll have all of the plans still listed there. You'll still have the pages that go to those that have the detailed instructions. You have the video link to them. But you can also, but it basically just like a list of all of this stuff. But I just, then I think about, God damn, now I've got that. Do I really want to put all of this on my table? So that means kind of maybe hiring somebody to do that new page. And because I got to tell you, WordPress, I don't like it. I can't, I mean, I've used it enough to know that I just can't get into that interface the way that it doesn't, it's not really a what you see is what you get kind of interface. To me, it feels old fashioned, even though I don't do this sort of thing. It just has that feel to me. Like, why isn't what I'm doing here? It looks like it's in a text area, but you have to click preview. Why doesn't it just all right there, you know?
You're used to Dreamweaver and WYSIWYG editors.
Yeah, WYSIWYG, yeah.
You old man, you. We don't do things like that anymore. I will give you the biggest piece of advice I can give you. Get a Shopify website.
Yeah. Oh, just use their full website.
Because yes, because the integration between YouTube and Shopify, you can be like, hey, click this button. Like you,
and I could just bring my domain over. So that would just be the new woodworking. Yes. So it would be hosted on Shopify, not wherever the hell it is now. Because I always forget. I don't even remember how to log on to my website because I used to have other people doing this. And so it's really frustrating.
And then you can have, do you have any merch on your YouTube channel right now?
T-shirts.
So you have the, excuse me, you have
Teespring. It used to be Teespring. Right. I don't know what it's called.
So you have the merch kind of tab active, but it's just going to Teespring now. So that would end up being, if you got a Shopify website, that ends up being your plans.
But I could also put the shirts and stuff on there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we do our eBooks and our, So cleanmyspace.com is where we have just the eBooks. Makersclean.com is where we sell all of our
cleaning supplies,
cleaning products. And we also have the eBooks there because a bunch of people were also buy eBooks at the same time. The best part about it is because it is a Shopify website, I can add those eBooks to the merch shelf versus on cleanmyspace.com, which is a WordPress website. I can only be like, hey guys, go down in the link below and click to the thing. If I have a YouTube channel, which I do, and I have a website, which I do, and it is a Shopify website, it will end up, it's a part of the actual YouTube. You can put buttons.
I think YouTube
and
is really
this,
behind that a lot. Yeah.
So now you could, and they're building, I mean, whatever, I don't know for sure, but we are going to get to the point where you can just click and you don't need to go anywhere. You've bought it, it's saved, it downloaded for you, and you can finish watching the video. Like, they are getting to that point. That's what they want to do. So the whole thought of like, go to my website to whatever, build your website, especially if you're going to use, and you will, YouTube as your core kind of marketing engine, one click. And when they actually absorb all of that and it becomes all in one, if you know what I'm saying, go get yourself, and like you were also suggesting, go put some new plans out there, because now if you're writing plans knowing that you're associating value with them, we noticed that all of the eBooks that we wrote knowing the value behind it, or knowing like kind of how much information we want to put into it, really, really helped inform and made it easier to kind of put that together, if that makes sense, as opposed to just trying to slap a price tag on something that you did a while ago.
Well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do that. I think I will. I'm just going to do Shopify, get rid of the old site. It's so funny how my website has changed over the years from like being like, I want this to be a hub for woodworking. And then it was like, well, I don't need this because people are just going to YouTube to this. And it's just all these different things. Now it's like, okay, I just want this stripped down. I just want a list of, nobody's going to read old articles that I wrote from 2012. You know, I don't need any of those blog stuff on there anymore. And I just wanted easily people to find plans.
And to what I was just saying, there's like, you were writing those back in the day for only like SEO purposes. You were like, we were creating this content because it was the thing you were supposed to do. And now we look back at it with such rose colored glasses. We're like, whoa, we should, this is the stuff that got whatever. But like, no, what you need right now is what you need right now. And you need to be able to like say in a one sentence exactly what it is that your channel does. And Steve, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. If I were to say, like in one sentence, what does your YouTube channel do? What does it do?
It's woodworking videos appealing to beginning woodworkers.
And it's not even glamorous. That's the thing. It just resonates.
Yeah, I've told other woodworkers that too who have asked for advice. I'm like, man, there's like hundreds of woodworking channels and most of them, you look at them, they don't have, what's your gimmick? And that is my gimmick, really. It's just that I have a very, this is exactly who I'm appealing to. These are the tools I'm going to be using are real simple and that sort of thing. But most people, you look at their channels and they could be really, really good at what they do. But man, if you don't have that pitch.
Can you think of anybody who's doing woodworking videos who's really, really good and also really relatable?
You mean their personality and they're doing really, really good woodworking?
Just like if I were to watch their videos, I feel like I could be doing.
Yeah, I would say probably Bourbon Moth is currently the guy. And you've probably seen his videos. He has a very down home, homey way of talking. He does voiceovers. He has a very clear voice. And his woodworking is really good. So I think that's why he's one of the top woodworking channels right now.
Do we have a lot of people who have now basically copied that style? So now that is basically the style of video.
Well, I think the funny thing is, and now here's what's interesting about that, is that what he's doing isn't anything new, that this has been kind of an established style. You shoot a lot of footage, you do the project, and then afterwards you record a voiceover. And mm-hmm. he's certainly not the first person to do that. But what he's doing is interjecting his personality and the way he shoots. He still shoots on his phone, but they look really good. And I think that's what it comes down to, is you've got to have something to offer more than your woodworking skills.
And does it pay off to come across like you know everything, or does it come across as like better when go back to like Robert Dunn as an example of like of course you could do everything, but like it's just fun and entertaining to watch the way that you approach it. And right now we're in a place where like everybody has to be like, oh, I'm a guru, I'm the pro, so just watch me do this and just like do it, and it needs to be polished. So is it in what he says? Because you are a great example of that. You love just approaching things with like, no, this is just the way normal people do it, not the way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the way I lean into that a lot, and I'm very aware of that kind of persona, which is me. I mean, there's nothing unusual. It's not like I'm putting on an act or anything. But I think that if you look at like Bourbon Moth, he's doing a similar delivery, I guess, but for kind of a different audience. His is much more of a lean back experience, just to watch him make it is more about the project to an even greater extent. So there's like two huge woodworking channels right now. It's him and it's Cam at Blacktail Studio. So those are the two main ones. And Cam Blacktail Studio does these epoxy tables. That's pretty much all he does. Don't know how sustainable that is over the long term, but his channel is one of these that shot up during the pandemic, and he started then, and it's just crazy numbers on there. I think it's starting to cool off a little bit. But he kind of approaches it from the, I guess, a little bit more of the, look how much I've spent on this. So sort of that style of YouTube, I don't want to say Mr. Beast because his delivery is nothing like Mr. Beast, but sort of that sort of sensational, here's this thing costs, I sold this for $15,000 or $20,000 a table. And then, you know, a lot of the comments he gets are just hate comments. People like, why are you doing this? How can you, you know, this is just pure clickbait. This is, but it's working for him, you know? And he's actually a really nice guy. And he really is. And if you listen to his videos, the way he describes what he's doing, it's very, he's got a calm voice, and, but he definitely kind of leans into that style.
I mean, the videos are incredibly well produced.
Yeah.
The thumbnails are top notch. The titles are top notch. He only releases a couple of video, like one video a month, it mm-hmm. seems, or something like that, and puts a lot of thought behind it. But this is also like clearly he's remarkably talented,
yeah.
And not like trying to overstate that, but clearly he's at this place because he's. People say that about Mr. Beast, where it's like he's so remarkably driven that like that has led to this. I'm looking at Cam's page here with 2.2 million. Like every video gets 2.5-3 million.
Yeah,
views,
he's killing.
Like in a couple of weeks, and they all, to your point, are like that exact same like vibe to
yeah.
it. And there was like.
He's actually aware of this because I've talked to him quite a few times, a lot actually. And I've asked him what's the goal here? Because sooner or later, people are going to get tired of these epoxy tables and they're going to become the lava lamps of the 2020s, uh-huh. you know? And he's aware of that. He's like, yeah, I know. So what he's doing is he's interjecting other types of videos that he knows right now won't get a lot of views. More kind of, I think, traditional woodworking stuff. And then in the hopes that that transition can be a little bit more seamless. So at some point he doesn't have to just pivot on a dime and completely change his content, which is smart.
And which was something that we really didn't even take into consideration many years ago.
Yeah.
Like when you have to think about the trajectory of your channel and it's like, yeah, this will get to a point where it's like, I can't keep doing the same
well,
thing.
Well, especially so if it's based on something as trendy as those river tables, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, maybe they'll last, but I don't see that happening for forever.
Okay. Are you gonna make a project video about a river?
No.
Steve Ramsey's approach to it now.
No, that isn't happening. Do you know what I saw YouTube said today on their one of their channel insider updates or whatever? They said that they're gonna be experimenting with memberships where they'll have membership previews. So if you have a video it's paywalled, it'll show up on a feed for regular people, but then once you click on it, I guess it'll say, if you'd like to watch the rest of this video, that's not going to piss people off. I assume you could opt out of that. I am going to assume it's not just automatically going to do that, because boy, that's just a recipe for pissing off an audience, seems like to me.
It's a really smart idea though, because I always felt the issue with Patreon was you really never knew what you were getting before you committed
True.
And subscribe to just seeing the blurred out, like, oh, here's a bunch of, and I get you don't want to give away all of the content for free, but that's not a bad idea.
Well, actually. I think it's not a bad idea until it shows up in your feed, and then it just becomes, oh, there's a new video by Chad,
yeah.
and it's like, oh, crap,
yeah.
no,
it's like, wait,
you lured me in with this, and now you want me to pay for it. I hope it's not going to be that way. Surely YouTube has thought this through. But then again, you never really know. Sometimes they don't understand the user experience that well.
And sometimes I feel like they just have to march through the shit show sometimes. They're just like, this is logically the thing that makes sense. So
yeah.
we know we're going to hear about it. Hopefully they'll be careful. I mean, I think they know how careful they need to be with that homepage feed. Because remember when they were doing the community tab
yeah.
stuff and they kind of pushed the community tab into the feed. And when they first started doing the shorts, they kind of pushed that. And people were like, oh, I don't like this. And then at the end of the day, it ends up finding this comfortable balance
yeah,
where
know,
it all works
I remember
out.
The community posts when those first came out and there was so much hate towards those. It's just it's a natural thing. Anytime YouTube comes out with something new, people have to hate.
Change.
It's different. But everybody thought, well, great. Now I'm not going to even see videos in my feed anymore. It's all going to be community posts. And it really hasn't become that, because I don't think anybody wants to do that, post just constant. I follow some channels that do like once a day, and I actually like that. I think that's really interesting. If I had my head together straight, I would like to do that, post a community post every day, just chit chat.
Oh, just like being able to connect, mm-hmm. and have like a new form of of connection with,
I think it's really good. The posts that I've done where I've actually talked about something that's meaningful to me or a topic or something, have gotten so many responses to them. The ones that don't are just the ones that, hey guys, I got a new video out. Those get just crickets. Nobody leaves a comment on those.
And you're also nice enough to share other people's stuff. Like you shared Tiffany Ferg's video not too long ago.
Yeah, and I think that's a good place to do that sort of thing. There's no fear, no threat.
There's no threat.
No threat from
There's
Tiffany.
No threat. The well, yeah.
Or from or anybody, just, really. I think it does, you know, good what? To it's, promote other channels.
You realize you have a platform and you people listen to you, and then there's this weird, like, you sometimes feel very hesitant saying things, or you feel like you're like saying too much, or you're mm-hmm. like, oh, am I in bothering people? Are they going to unsubscribe if I do too much? I remember asking a Google engineer about that. It's like, hey, if I just released a short every single day for the rest of the year, like, aren't people? No, because apparently it just does not end up. Yeah, it's the way Facebook used to work, mm-hmm. where you would, I think that was the first kind of like introduction to the way that algorithms and feeds are done, because we would be like, oh, post a thing, oh, but let's not post anything else for the rest of the day because we posted a thing, and we don't want to be without
oversharing.
Thinking that when you quote unquote post something, it's not going to the 241,000 people, it's going to 12,326 people, and it's going to figure out whether it goes any further than that. And there's like just a little drop offs at each point while it gets through people, and then people aren't interested. But this thought of like, we release something and then all at the same time, 241,000 people see it. And then if you were to delete it and then put it back up, 241,000 people are going to be like, why are you reposting?
Yeah, that's what
it doesn't work that
I think
way.
That term oversharing probably started with Facebook back in the like 2010 or 2008, whenever the Facebook was kind of getting traction. People were, and I think it was before they had those systems in place, where I think you did see your friends' posts and then it was just mainly your friends and stuff. You're like, God, stop oversharing. But now I don't think it's really possible to overshare on those platforms. But I really think that YouTube in the next few years, well, if it's already becoming this, is going to be kind of the Amazon of media. Like the place to consume it, all kinds, any type of media, whether it's a podcast, a video, discussions, shorts.
I agree.
Everything.
Like the Walmart. Yeah, it's
and
a very
now
good
with
way
their
to
integration
it.
to sales, you know, like the Shopify and all of this, it is kind of a one-stop shop for just media.
Oh, and for creators who want access, like it really is. It's that safe space for you to go, and you can have, you don't need to go anywhere else anymore. You can have your podcast. They have separate podcast channels now, and they, you know, encourage that. They have the shorts, lives. These memberships are going to be going through. Help with your merch sales. There is a completely turnkey for a creative person to come onto this platform and have all of the different outlets available to them in the most efficient kind of way without having to go off platform or without being like, hey, go over to my website and sign up. And we know now, at least on Facebook, as soon as you put a link to something else in a post, you're going to get 1% of the amount of traction that you're going to get.
It's crazy.
So it makes sense that YouTube's just going to move into a space of like, I follow this person on YouTube so that I just do everything with this person through YouTube. I consume their podcasts. I buy their merch through YouTube. Da, 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 da. And it really does. It's long gone are the days of having to have 17 different accounts and different styles of content and figuring out how to like fit my content into Instagram and then make a short and post that over here. You can just do it all with YouTube now. YouTube's gonna win.
Yeah, I think basically they've got the power of Google behind them, so that helps.
Have you noticed that every single YouTuber that has problems getting out of the content trap are all people who edit their own videos. And that literally the biggest obstacle for a creator is finding an editor that they could trust, or at least getting to the point where they understand that editing does not like make the video as much as it does. Mm-hmm. Like you need to get to the point where you need to push yourself being the bottleneck of your content. Is that fair to say?
You think a lot, what are you saying? You think a lot of YouTubers hit that point where that's the content wall you're talking about?
So I think we mentioned last week that I went to a shorts. So I got to meet a lot of new young creators who kind of like work in that space of just always being on and always creating content and always like whatever. And especially with the shorts, some of the really big shorts people have the editing down to such like an algorithm and a science that it's so it like it's almost like it's the Colonel's secret recipe with them, where it's like part of what I could never teach it to someone else, but it ends up like we were talking about last week, which is like it puts you in that position where it's like now you can't get off of the content wheel because you're making excuses why you have to be involved in every single point of it.
But I think a lot of those people I think that their success is probably because of that way that they edit. People are familiar with that. And maybe they can train somebody else to do it exactly like that. But I think that's a difficult prospect. At least it has been for me to find somebody. I'm sorry about the noise. That's my gardener is out here and he's doing the leaf blower thing out. He's here early today. Never fails.
That's a loud leaf blower. He's right. Sounds like he's in the garage with you.
He's like right up next to the door out there. And I have a workbench sitting outside and I can hear him blowing like underneath the workbench. And so it's making this whooshing sound. But anyway, what was I saying about?
The microphone's picking up everything. Imagine Robert Dunn not editing his own videos or Wheezy Waiter not editing
his
own
videos. Yeah, I think that it depends on the person and the topic, I guess, kind of what you're doing. And also how long you've been doing it. Because I've tried having editors for my videos and had real hard time with it. Although the last two courses I did, I had somebody edit them for me, but I kind of feel like that was a separate format in a way, and it was presented a little differently, and I was actually really happy, but it did take a lot of me kind of really fussing with the edits a little bit, especially with the woodworking, just so they knew exactly when I wanted a certain shot cut and this sort of thing. So I was lucky enough to find somebody who did woodworking, who sort of understood that. So that helped. But for my regular YouTube videos, I've released two videos that where I was trying out an editor, and each one was a different editor, and I just wanted to see how it would go. And it was really weird because I was recently looking through some of my old videos, and I was trying to find footage from one of these videos, and I found the footage, but I couldn't find my editing file, my, you know, Premiere file. And it wasn't there because I didn't edit. And I totally forgotten about that. And I watched the video and I was like, oh, this is not good. I can tell I didn't edit this. And I wonder how many people also picked up on that. I don't remember, but I'm sure a lot of people didn't care much for that style.
For anybody who would be listening, who'd be interested in seeing one of those videos, do you remember the titles?
I don't remember which ones they were. I'm going to have to go back. I'll report back next week.
Do that. Report back. I'm sure I would like to see. I would love to see.
Yeah. I will. I'll find out what those were. And it was like, oh, geez, I would have never edited it like that. I feel like to me that is half of my video presentation is by editing.
It is.
It's just me. This point, and I just have to do it. But I think that there's plenty of channels who are doing, you know, instructional videos or in all kinds of other genres that can just hire an editor just fine and not have a problem.
But it's so particular when it's done. It's like a fingerprint. It's 100% done by Steve, and I think people can see that. And I think it's very interesting that, like, in a case like Robert Dunn or Wheezy Waiter, like they're more kind of solo personalities, so therefore that really is an like a really important part of the video. But I can see how clean my space, like we hire editors to, you know, whatever. So like they have to fall in line with what a clean my space video is. But no one also looks at a clean my beyond the ones that I was just doing myself. When we started getting into like mass producing videos, we're just like, this is our style. This is kind of the things that should be in the video. And that's pretty much it. And most people now can't watch and be like, oh, that's edited by this person or edited by that person. Because it's just a style. However, I can see how Robert Dunn would be like, no. It's like, it is literally just as important as the way that I deliver this joke, the way that I time this edit and this cut to move to this, to the, and it really does. Because, and I guess the whole reason why I brought this up is because it was the one thing. So you can take everything else away from a YouTuber, but just like that editing is like, it's like your special power. And it was almost easier for you to do it because it was a course, right? It wasn't going on YouTube. Like you couldn't imagine someone editing a 25 minute long project video in the way that you would.
Yeah.
They would never know.
So, I also might kind of, you know, I might get just a little too precious with my videos too. And I probably could find an editor and it would still, I would still be able to keep some of the same vibe of my videos.
It wouldn't be the same.
But I just don't think, because a lot of times I put things in my videos that I was never planning on putting in my videos, just because, you know, while I'm editing it, I see something that was like, oh, that would be a funny thing to put in there. Or I don't know how to even describe that kind of stuff to an editor without just sitting over their shoulder, which defeats the whole purpose of having an editor.
It really is almost as crazy as having someone come in and just be a new host. It's like, oh, I'm hosting the exact same way that Steve hosts. And I say the same type of thing, but it would just be like so, it's inauthentic. And I think you would probably be able to get away with it. But I think with where you kind of fit into the media ecosphere, I think it'd be a very short-lived. Yeah. And I think people would be like, yeah, that's when he just started like,
yeah, that's when,
that's when he started outsourcing.
That's when it started, yeah. That's when it all went down. I was friends for a number of years with this guy, lived nearby, our kids knew each other, and he was the, he was a film editor at Lucasfilm. And so we have Skywalker Ranch is a couple of miles from where I live. And he took us there one time to show us how he edited one of the Star Wars films. I don't remember which one. I'm not really up on the Star Wars stuff. But it was really cool because he had this huge editing, you know, studio. And then there's this red couch there. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's where George sits. And George would, he would like, Orlando would do the editing, and then George would sit back there and tell him like how to edit certain things. You know, he was like, okay, cut here, do this and do that. So he kind of like directed the editing to a certain extent. I suppose that he probably did like a rough edit and then brought George in to sit down. And then of course this was back when George was still a part of the company.
doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what made the first movies what they were. Yeah. And that's what made the second set of the movies what they were. The second set, second series was about making money and producing large scale and still wonderful.
It still had George's thumbprint on all of it, yeah.
Oh, when you watch A New Hope, like you just watched the character development and story and all of that other stuff. That is what appeals to us. And like almost all of that is done in the editing. It's actually not even special effects or any of that. And you could probably take one of those newer Star Wars movies, hand it over to George if he had the, you know, gumption to do it, and sit down and edit all of, you know, a new one himself. I bet you'd get a completely different movie.
Yeah, I think that's what we're seeing today with the, as for, I don't really follow the Star Wars stuff pretty clearly, but now it sounds like it's just a corporate machine just cranking out garbage.
Everybody has their own individual, you know, movies, and I get it. If people are thirsty, you want to want to feed them, and if like I get it. I totally get all of that. However, our conversation was about why YouTubers find that being the most intimidating, overwhelming thing to step away from. It ends up being like one of the most important, like There's what you do on camera. And then when you're putting it together, you're like, oh, shit, this is so important because this is literally the fabric of the video, as you pointed out. Like, it can change. It can. It takes so much shape. And to hand that off to someone who knows how to do something like by reading a binder, but doesn't know the secret to kind of like
the stuff you can't even really describe. You can't really. And I think that's the same with.
You can never outsource.
Yeah. And to compare this to like what George Lucas was doing, a lot of people, younger people, know Star Wars from that second trilogy, you know, the one that came out in the early 2000s. Yeah. That's like their baseline. They love that. And it was because he still had a hand in all of that. It was his story, you know, like him or not. He loved those stories and he was passionate about it. And so it had his stamp on it. And I think that's the same with, you could tell the YouTubers that are like, I'm just saying my lines and then somebody else does it, everything else, you know?
So, I mean, the woodworking channels that we were talking about, the, at least the two kind of largest ones are, I'm assuming that way. Do both of those gentlemen edit their own videos?
Cam does not. Cam even has his own guy who shoots the videos now. And Jason over at Bourbon Moth, I think he edits his own.
It'd be interesting to see if the vast majority of that audience thinks or cares about stuff like that, or if this is some weird antiquated thing that we talk about from the days of like, oh, you used to just be able... Is it now just assumed that if you are a large YouTube channel like this and you didn't know anything about Cam, that you would just assume, oh, well, clearly he has a the whole crew and I'm sure he has an editing. Like, is it just assumed, or would people look at that and be like, oh, what's very special is, you know,
I kind of
look at how he does everything.
It seems like anymore, I look at most channels assuming that they have a whole team behind them. I never used to be that way. I used to assume first that it was just the one person and this was their passion and everything.
And regardless of the size of the channel, it seems like you get there on your own kind of recognizance, or you get there by yourself. And then as soon as you start bringing other people in to add to the and increase the production flow, you move from making it for one reason to making it for another reason. And that, that's the thing that people pick up in a second.
But you know who's doing this really well is Kevin at Epic Gardening. He went from just the basically himself doing the stuff and transitioned real seamlessly to having a huge crew that he works with. I don't know if it's huge, but I mean, you know, he's got people. He's even got other people on camera now too, which also is really tricky to do. And to pull that off, because that's...
Hence why not many people have managed to build a channel and then bring on other people and have them welcomed in that channel space and not like instantly pushed away.
Yeah, that's unusual. All right, we'll see you guys later.